Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, you may press star one if you would like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd now like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Kate Brogan. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kate Brogan. I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Thank you for joining us on this call. Today, NOAA Fisheries is declaring an unusual mortality event involving North Atlantic right whales in the U.S. and Canada. To tell you more about this declaration and how our agency and partners, both in the U.S. and Canada, are working to investigate right whale deaths, I have the privilege of introducing you to Dave Gouveia, Protected Species Monitoring Program Branch Chief for NOAA Fisheries Greater Atlantic Region. He's going to provide a brief summary of our news, and then we'll open for questions. We also have several other experts available to answer your questions on the call today, including Terry Rolls with our Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Program at NOAA Fisheries Office of Protected Resources, Sarah Wilkins, she's also our National Training and Emergency Response Coordinator for NOAA Fisheries Protected Resources Office. We have Mendy Guerin, who's our Stranding Coordinator for NOAA Fisheries in the Greater Atlantic. We have Sean Hayes, he's the Protected Species Branch Chief for NOAA's Northeast Fisheries Science Center. And we have Matthew Hardy on the line as well. He's the Aquatic Resources Management Division Manager for Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. The names and titles of those experts can be found on the media advisory that was sent to you yesterday. If you would like a copy of that advisory or need more information about names and titles, please feel free to contact me after the call. Thank you especially to Matthew from DFO Canada for being on the line today. A reminder, this call is for working media only. If you are not a member of the press, you're welcome to listen in, but please do not ask questions. This time is really reserved for reporters. With that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Dave. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us this morning. The North Atlantic right whale is one of the most critically endangered populations of large whales in the world. The best estimate for the number of North Atlantic right whales that reside in the North Atlantic Ocean, including the U.S. and Canadian Atlantic coastal waters, is approximately 450 to 500 whales. Since June, there have been 10 confirmed individual dead stranded right whales in the Gulf of St. Lawrence region in Canada, and 2 dead stranded whales in the United States. In addition, 4 live entangled North Atlantic right whales have been documented during this time in Canada, with 2 whales successfully being disentangled. Further, prior to the Gulf of St. Lawrence mortalities, a North Atlantic right whale was found dead in April in Cape Cod Bay here in Massachusetts, bringing the year-to-date total of 13 confirmed dead stranded right whales. The annual average for dead strandings in Canada and the U.S. combined is 3.8 per year. In response to this unprecedented mortality event, NOAA Fisheries, in consultation with Canada's Division of Fisheries and Oceans, has declared an unusual mortality event under the Marine Mammal Protection Act for North Atlantic right whales throughout their range based on the recent elevated strandings along the Atlantic coast, predominantly in the Gulf of St. Lawrence region in Canada. An unusual mortality event, or a UME, is defined under the Marine Mammal Protection Act as a stranding that is unexpected, involves a significant die-off of marine mammal populations, and demands immediate response. The Working Group on Marine Mammal Unusual Mortality Events was formalized in 1992 when Congress established the Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Response Program. The Working Group determines when a UME is occurring based upon 7 criteria and helps direct the response and investigation. Once the working group determines a UME is occurring, NOAA Fisheries declares a UME and designates an on-site coordinator for the investigation. This enhances and strengthens the investigative process into the cause of the unusual mortalities by providing additional resources and expertise. The UME working group determined that the recent right whale strandings met 4 of the 7 criteria that warrant a UME declaration. And we'll go over and review what those factors are during our Q&A session a little bit later this morning. The UME working group's recommendation was then forwarded to NOAA Fisheries and considered in our decision to declare this UME. Now that the UME has been declared, a more formal investigative process will proceed. NOAA Fisheries will work with our Canadian colleagues and other external experts to review data from the past 13 mortalities and to develop recommendations for future responses, sampling and data collection efforts, and data analysis. Right whale stranding events will continue to be closely monitored and prioritized for response efforts throughout their range in eastern Canada and in the United States waters from Maine to Florida. Environmental and habitat conditions, including anthropogenic threats, will also be monitored and assessed for risk factors that could impact right whales. So before we move into the Q&A session, let me conclude by saying that the North Atlantic right whale recovery is fragile and one of NOAA Fisheries and Canada's Division of Fisheries and Oceans' most difficult conservation challenges. The population numbers are very low and recovery is very slow. Every factor influencing their ability to thrive is significant, and even small changes in productivity and survivorship have greater effects than in a recovered population. North Atlantic right whales live in waters that are also supported with continuous commercial activities that can seriously injure or kill these animals, entanglements in fishing gear and ship strikes being the best known. Therefore, the recent right whale mortalities are concerning. NOAA Fisheries and Canada's Division of Fisheries and Oceans are committed to working together to support research and monitoring to better understand all aspects of the species and its ecology to solve these challenging right whale problems. The most important step members of the public can do to assist our investigation is not to approach or touch stranded whales, but immediately report any strandings of live whales in distress or stranded or dead whales. To make a report, you can simply call our Greater Atlantic Marine Mammal Stranding Hotline at 866-755-6622, the Southeast Marine Mammal Stranding Hotline at 877-433-8299, the Canadian Marine Animal Response Society at 866-567-6277, or the Quebec Marine Mammal Emergency Response Network at 877-722-5346, or you can contact the U.S. or Canadian Coast Guard on VH Channel 16. And again, please do not approach or touch any stranded whale. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. At this time, we're going to open for questions from reporters. Operator, if you could please explain the process for asking a question.
Sure. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Please remember to unmute your phone and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. In the event that you would like to withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment as we wait for questions. Our first question comes from Adam Reese, NBC News.
Thank you for doing this. If I could just ask you to repeat once again your preface where you detailed the number of whales that are involved, the number of confirmed dead, and the locations, please.
Certainly. Since June, there have been 10 confirmed individual dead stranded right whales in the Gulf of St. Lawrence region in Canada and 2 dead stranded whales in the United States. In addition, there's been 4 live entangled right whales that have been documented in Canada at this time, 2 of which have been successfully disentangled. And then earlier this year, I had noted that there was an additional right whale that had died in April in Cape Cod Bay. So the year-to-date total is 13 confirmed dead stranded right whales. And then later on, I had mentioned that the annual average of dead strandings for Canadian and U.S. waters combined was 3.8. So as you can see, we're clearly over that average.
The next question comes from Patrick Whittle, Associated Press.
Hi, thank you. Could you just talk a little bit more about the formal investigative process and the sort of the development of responses to these mortalities with Canada and what that could ultimately look like?
This is Carrie Rolls with NOAA's Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Response Program. So typically for unusual mortality and then investigations, the investigation is kind of divided into two components. The first is response mode. So it's making sure that we can get to and appropriately handle dead strandings, collect the samples and the information that's needed, and assist in any live animals that are impacted, like live strandings. The second section of doing an investigation is actually taking the data, collecting all of that information on each individual, and bringing it together with a panel of experts and looking at the cause of death and contributing factors to each of the mortalities, and then look at it together as a whole. And that includes looking at environmental data, fishery, prey-based habitat use, a lot of other types of information. And from all of the animals that are floating at sea, seen first floating at sea, doing some hindcasting and forecasting, looking at where the carcasses may go so that we can get access to them if they're too far from shore, and where they may have floated from or come from. I want to make you aware of the fact that the place in which a carcass is reported is not necessarily the place in which the animal died. So these types of drift models are really important for us to understand where the injury or the mortality occurred, in addition to where the carcass is reported when we initially hear about it. For the collaboration with Canada, that would be doing an integrated investigation of what's going on based on the work that was done in Canada and the work that's done in the United States, and with a lot of the partners that help with right whale conservation and science that actually move across the national boundaries as when the whales do, and have a collaboration with those people as well.
Our next question comes from Brett Ruskin, CBC News. You have an open line.
Good morning, everyone. Just a quick question about the timeline for this. Do we expect, do we have a timeline yet for either an interim report or a final report, or is it still simply too early to tell?
This is Terry Rolls again. So I think for parts and pieces of this, yes. So we're still in the response phase of this and the investigation phase. So a final report or even an interim report of the overall investigation is probably months away, as we see what happens in the next months as animals are moving out of Canada back into the United States, and particularly going down into the southeast U.S. So a final report of the overall investigation months away. For individual necropsy findings, as we determine those, that's probably weeks to a few months away for those more recent ones in the United States, and I'll let Matthew talk about those in Canada.
So Matthew Hardy here. So we do expect to have our necropsy results finalized. We're aiming for mid-September to late September to have those finalized, but this is a tremendous amount of work for the six necropsies that we completed in the Gulf of St. Lawrence here with the help of our various partners, particularly thanks to the Canadian Wildlife Health Cooperative, who provided a lot of the pathological expertise on these necropsies.
Our next question comes from David Abel, the Boston Globe.
Hi, thanks. I think most of my questions have been answered at this point, but I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about just what actually is done in terms of aerial surveys, any kind of on-the-ground action that would happen to further test or find answers, and what exactly are you what are the possible outcomes of this research in terms of what you learn and then what might actually be done about it? I mean, are there any enforcement actions that you could sort of give us a sense of what could be the fruit of this investigation, either in the United States and in Canada?
So maybe I'll start. This is Dave Govea from the Greater Atlantic Region, and I'll try and go in reverse order. So I'll start with your last question, David, in terms of what we might glean from the report when it ultimately is completed. First and foremost, the number one thing and the number one priority we hope to get from the report is a general cause for what caused these mortalities. That will enable both countries, the United States and Canada, to focus their energies on trying to address whatever it is that created that mortality. So whether it be a commercial fishing gear interaction or a commercial shipping interaction, it allows us to focus our energies on better managing to reduce that serious injury and mortality. And it lends itself nicely in terms of how we focus our limited resources in that regard. So that's why it's critically important that we get information from this UME, because it helps us fine-tune and hone in on the problem areas that are prohibiting us from reaching recovery for the species.
So, Matthew Hardy, perhaps I can add to what we've been doing in Canadian waters in response to all of this. So we have had a number of aerial platforms. We're putting a lot of effort into aerial surveillance as well as vessel-based surveillance to understand what the whale distribution is like in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. It wasn't that long ago that that sightings of right whales in the Gulf was considered a rare occurrence. So we've obviously seen a much greater number in recent years, and particularly in this year. In terms of what we have done recently in terms of mitigation, you know, we have implemented a very large a speed reduction zone for large vessels, so vessels greater than 65 feet. That the zone of that of speed reduction represents about 25,000 square miles. You know, and we're restricting vessel traffic to 10 knots or less. We've also modified a number of the ongoing fisheries to either close fisheries or to restrict fisheries to areas where the whales are not occurring. So these are all factors that that we're looking at, and the more that we understand from this, and I hope that the UME process will help us further explore all the potential causes, that, as well as perhaps contributing factors in terms of environmental conditions and whatnot. We hope that this will all serve to better inform future decision-making going forward, and help, as my colleagues have pointed out, help ensure a robust recovery of this species.
In addition, if I could add on to that, again, this is Dave Govea from the Greater Atlantic Region. In addition to what Matthew has provided, both countries certainly recognize the importance of this event and what it means to the recovery of the species. So we have spent a considerable amount of time coordinating to take, I don't want to call it immediate action, but as we wait for the results of the UME to unfold to again, help us to fine-tune what direction we need to do in terms of management to get on the right track of recovery of the species. We have worked together to look at some bilateral work groups where we could collaboratively look at science and management needs between both countries to see what areas and what gaps that we might need to improve upon, and try to develop plans how we can collaboratively work together to address those gaps in science that would better support and lend itself to some of our management needs. So we've embarked on establishing a bilateral set of work groups that's going to do just that, and we're going to be meeting shortly. I think our first meeting is in September, and then we'll have subsequent meetings thereafter. So although it might seem as though the UME process is a little bit longer than most may have anticipated, it's not stopping both governments from moving forward and trying to get more information as the investigation itself unfolds.
next question comes from Brett Bundale, Canadian Press.
Yeah, good morning. I have, a two-part question. The first, I think, has been in part answered, and I'm just wondering if we can elaborate a bit on the role Canada will be playing in the investigation. I don't know if Matthew Hardy might be able to speak to that. And the second part is just to maybe talk a little bit about the causes. I know there's been mentioned before that changing habitat, maybe changing waters, temperatures. I'm also wondering if there's maybe anything offshore, either testing or seismic or sonar testing that could be involved. So I guess there are two different or separate questions that I'd like answered.
Sure, I can go ahead. It's Matthew here. In terms of the UME, this is part of the broader investigation. We've been actively involved in this situation, been working with our colleagues at NOAA since the beginning of this situation. During the UME process, I expect that to continue. We have members on that committee, and we will be exchanging information between both countries as this goes on. For everyone to understand, this is very much a collaborative relationship between both our organizations, as well as with a number of other external partners that have been very active on this file. In terms of the second part of your question, the changing habitat, these are all things that will be part of the investigation. We have specialists in zooplankton and food distribution and oceanography and toxicology and all these different fields that will help feed into our understanding of what has actually happened in this case. So all of that will be part of that investigation and tracking what has actually occurred and what is bringing right whales in great abundance to the Gulf of St. Lawrence at this time. To my knowledge, there has been no seismic activity for exploration in the Gulf of St. Lawrence in 2017.
Next question comes from Adam Reese, NBC News.
Thanks again. Just a quick question. If you could just take a minute, I know you mentioned a couple of the causes, entanglement and possibly commercial fishing or commercial shipping. Could you be specific? I know the report's not done, it's preliminary, but as best you can, causes as to the die-off?
So Matthew Hardy here, I can start with that one, I guess. In terms of what we've seen, in terms of our observations over the last number of months, the primary concerns and the primary threats for North Atlantic right whale continue to be that of shipping or vessel strikes, as well as fishing gear entanglement. I believe that those continue to be our primary suspects going forward. But that's not to say that we haven't been looking at other factors and contributing factors, and that's why I say that this is still an extensive process just to go through all the other factors and ensure that we're having a really holistic look at the whole situation.
Next question comes from Molly Samuel, WABE.
Hi there. Can you give a sense of what this means for the whale populations overall, and if you have a count on the deaths, males, females, ages, and sort of what the impact of 13 means for a population of this size?
Dave, do you want me to take that?
Sure, Sean.
This is Sean Hayes, Northeast Fishery Science Center's Protected Species Branch. So 13 animals is a lot of animals when you're talking about a population of less than 500. So depending on where we are in the current population, it's anywhere from potentially 2 to 3% of the entire population. So particularly because it happened in such a truncated period, that is obviously additional areas of concern. The current population sex ratio is also highly skewed so that it's dominated by males. And so when you're looking at the actual breeding portion of the population that are both mature and females, there's far less than, we're less than 200 females in the population roughly. And so we're looking at a concern there of how many animals are available to even produce calves, which is the way the population would subsequently grow again. My understanding is the sex ratio of the mortalities this summer was on par with the males and female ratio that's in the population.
The next question comes from Cassie Williams, CBC.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, I know that in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, we've reduced this season ship traffic down to 10 knots. My question is that clearly there's a lot of ship traffic and fishing activity that takes place off the coast of New England, and I'm just wondering what is done in New England to prevent these sorts of entanglements, and if there's any sort of technology that's being looked at or addressed that could possibly prevent entanglements in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. It's kind of a two-part question. Is there something specific about the shape or bathymetry of the Gulf of St. Lawrence that makes entanglements or ship strikes such an issue for this species?
This is Dave Govea from the Greater Atlantic Region. In terms of what we're doing here in the United States, under our Marine Mammal Protection Plan and Endangered Species Act, for quite some time, our country has been dealing with both commercial fishing interactions and also commercial vessel interactions, primarily with all the large whale species in our waters, but dominated obviously by right whales. So in terms of first starting with vessel interactions or ship strikes, we have a national East Coast strategy for protection of right whales that focuses on speed restrictions, very similar to the ones that were temporarily put in place in the Gulf of St. Lawrence area, in terms of slowing vessel speeds down to 10 knots or less in certain areas during certain times of the year when right whales are prevalent. Those are seasonal restrictions. We also have dynamic restrictions for unexpected aggregations of right whales in certain areas in which we will put together a speed restriction in that area where we have that unexpected aggregations, and again asking vessel operators to slow their vessels down during that areas. We've also developed areas to be avoided where we have historic areas where right whales frequent on an annual basis. We also have mandatory ship reporting when you enter our ports of call to get the latest sightings information from our aerial survey team that our science center provides as well. So those are some of the things that we've done for the vessel interaction side of things, and that's up and down the Atlantic seaboard in all of our major ports. And again, we have that dynamic program to hit some of the areas where you have unexpected aggregations of right whales. In addition to that, we've also adjusted some of our ship traffic lanes, working very closely with our science center and some of our other NOAA partners to adjust the traffic flow into areas, again, where we have known aggregations of right whales. In terms of commercial fishing gear interactions, under our take reduction plan and the Marine Mammal Protection Act, for the last 20 to 25 years, we've done a lot of gear modifications to address entanglement risks associated with trap pot gear, particularly lobster, and also our gillnet fisheries. And there we've modified provided certain gear modifications in certain areas, again, during certain times of the year and year-round in other areas that address the volume of gear in terms of the volume of line in the water by reducing the number of buoy lines in the water, prohibiting the use of float rope at the surface system of fixed gear, as well as the rope in between traps and pots and on the ocean floor at the bottom. And we've also implemented a series of closures, some year-round and some seasonal. In toll, we've taken out approximately 30,000 miles of line out of the water column over the years, and we've also closed seasonally about 32,000 square nautical miles of fishing territory during the course of the year. And again, that expands certain areas, certain times of the year along the entire Atlantic seaboard.
Next question comes from Tom Bateman, the Times and Transcript newspaper.
Hi there. Thank you for your time. I'm interested in the size and scope of the UME. I'd imagine that declaring the UME allows access to a certain amount of resources for NOAA, and I wonder, what financially is put behind this in terms of other resources, and then how that relates to the mobilization we're seeing north of the border in Canada. How much more are you able to do now because of the UME? Thank you.
Harry, do you want to address this one quickly?
Sure. So to respond to unusual mortality events in the United States, we do have a contingency fund which allows us to use funds from that to support additional efforts to obtain carcasses, do necropsies, analyze samples, pull together and synthesize reports. In addition, there are other assets we can bring to bear, which is scientific access to scientists, particularly the working group, who have a lot of critical information and a diverse background that can contribute to the investigation. And then working with Canada between the two agencies and the networks that they bring with them is going to provide a fair amount of technical expertise to go forward on this.
Patrick, do you need anything repeated? I feel like there was just a disturbance on the call.
I'm good. I did miss a dollar amount, though. I'm not sure if that was given or not.
So at this point, we have not developed a budget for this investigation. So I can't speak to what the cost would likely be.
Next question comes from Patrick Whittle of Associated Press.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to sort of highlight was that some months ago when Mr. Joe Howlett passed on during a response effort in Canada, Canada announced that it was putting new restrictions on responses to entangled whales, and I'm just wondering what the status of that is and what the status of same is in U.S. waters now.
So, Matthew here. So we have not resumed disentanglement activities for right whales at this time. This is something that we will be pursuing over the coming months to develop our approach to it in consultation with the different associations, the different groups that do engage in disentanglement activities. So at this time, there hasn't been a change in approach.
And I'm going to let Sarah talk to it for NOAA. So this is Sarah Wilkin. So in the United States, we developed a heightened safety presentation for our authorized responders, and the majority of our responders have now taken that. So for species other than right whales, entanglement response is continuing as it was before the tragic events with Mr. Howlett. With heightened consultation and working more closely with NOAA Fisheries. For right whales specifically, we have authorized response on a case-by-case basis. There has not been an entangled right whale in U.S. waters since those events, and we would envision responses continuing with our level five, our most experienced and qualified responders, in case-by-case close consultation with NOAA.
And before we take our next question, I'd like to remind everyone to ask a question, you may press star 1 and record your name. And our next question comes from Emily Dooley of Newsday.
Hi, thank you very much for doing this. I'm wondering if you could give a little bit of details about the two animals that died in the U.S. and if you could give the sex breakdown of all 12 of the animals that have died since June.
Hi, this is Mindy Guerin with the Greater Atlantic Regional Fisheries Office. For the most recent cases in U.S., one was a severely decomposed carcass that stranded on Martha's Vineyard. And we did mount a response to that carcass, and we have very limited information resulting from that examination due to the advanced decomposition state of that case. And then the second case was reported on August 14th, and that was reported approximately 160 miles offshore. So we had quite a collaborative effort with assistance from the United States Coast Guard and our network partners to try to relocate that carcass for examination. And we mounted a response over a 7-day period, and we were unable to relocate the carcass for an at-sea examination. So our efforts stood down at that point. So we don't have much information other than a animal ID on that case. And I will turn it over to others to answer the second part of your question.
Matthew here. Just for the Canadian whales that that we examined and documented, you'll find most of the information on our website under right whale deaths in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and that includes the full breakdown and timeline for all the different animals. I believe Kate will be able to see the link for all the details in terms of timing and whatnot and what was done and what kind of sampling was done.
Yes, Emily, if you want to contact me after, I can provide that link for you.
Then this is Terry Rolls. I just wanted to add a comment. It has been extremely valuable to all of us as we're investigating these whales in the work that the New England Aquarium has been doing to identify the carcasses and then give us the sighting history of the whale. And that takes a lot of work and a lot of cooperation with the people doing the aerial survey, like Sean's group at Northeast Fisheries Science Center. But having the information and the background information of individual whales has been very important as we try to understand and piece the overall event together. So I just wanted to acknowledge the work that the contribution they're making.
Matthew here. I'd just like to echo that as well, because without the assistance of the New England Aquarium, we would be missing a lot of information. We would lose a lot of context. So their contribution to this has been extremely helpful, as well as the advice that they have provided throughout this this event.
The next question comes from Dinah Pulver of Daytona Beach News Journal.
Hi, yes, thanks. I wondered if you could tell me if someone could speak to the concern in the overall context of the whale population given the decline in calves over the last few years. And I wanted to just go back over. I thought you said there had been 4 reported entangled whales and 2 had been disentangled, and so I wondered if there are other known whales out there in Canada right now that are entangled.
Let me handle the second part of your question first. So just in terms of the entangled whales, there's one whale that was found dead, entangled in gear. Of the others that were entangled and or disentangled, they have not been reported again with gear. One of the whales that had been entangled was reported gear free. But we're continuing to monitor and try to match. And this is, again, where the New England Aquarium plays a role in terms of matching through photo identification to resight the other whales.
And this is Sean Hayes. I can try to address the declining calves question. It's an issue that we are aware of in the population, and obviously it's a very important concern. The two parts of population growth are number of deaths and number of births. And when number of deaths is high and births is low, it's obviously, from a simple algebraic standpoint, hard to recover a population. The issue of declining calves is potentially separate from this UME, were studying the causes of it. And by we, it's an extended group of scientists from the Northeast Fisheries Science Center working with New England Aquarium as well as Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, amongst others, to evaluate what is going on in the population in terms of that. And there's any number of potential causes.
And the next question comes from Dave Heinzman, 91.9 The Bend.
Hi there. Thank you for your time. I was looking for a few more details on those 4 of 7 factors that triggered the unusual mortality event declaration, please.
This is Terry Rolls, again, from NOAA. The 4 factors that were met that triggered this declaration of an unusual mortality event was a marked increase in magnitude or change in nature of the mortality when compared to prior records. A temporal change is occurring, a spatial change is occurring, and potentially significant morbidity, mortality, or straining is observed in a species that is particularly vulnerable, such as the North Atlantic right whales.
The next question comes from Haven Egresitz of Cape Cod Times.
Hi. So actually all my questions have been answered. I am wondering, are there any other unusual mortality events in the same waters with other animals that are being worked on right now?
So there's a current open unusual mortality event for humpback whales along the Atlantic coast. And there's significant overlap in that in the U.S. Most of the stranding networks up and down the Atlantic coast respond to both right whales and humpback whales. And so there are some of the same responders that are looking at the mortalities associated with both of these unusual mortality events.
And the next question comes from Todd Battis, CTV News.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. About the time that the necropsies are due to be released, the results is, from what I understand, about the time that the whales start to make their southern migration out of Canadian waters. So I'm just wondering, you mentioned about the seasonal speed reduction. Is that an automatic reduction, or is that something that has to be ordered through officials, and what kind of success has it been met with in terms of buy-in from industry? How is, you know, the amount of fines doled out been low, that type of thing?
This is Dave Govea from the Greater Atlantic Region again. As I had mentioned a little bit earlier, in terms of our ship strike strategy for right whales, we have 2 different components. One is a seasonal area component where we put ship speed restrictions in place in certain areas during certain times of the year where we have known aggregations of right whales. And again, that's where we know that where they've been over a historical period of time. So those are in place on an annual basis. And for those areas where we have those unexpected aggregations, we have that dynamic area management program where we'll impose a speed restriction in an area when we have 3 or more right whales in a given area will create a zone that reduces the speed. So those things are, we try to address both where we know right whales are and also areas where we find unexpected aggregations of right whales. And again, some of the other things that we've done to shift shipping lanes out of, to put the ships out of, or the right whales out of harm's way with those ships are some of the other things that we've done. In terms of enforcement, this is actually one of the better areas that we've been able to focus on because that's a lot of the vessels that we, well, the vessels that we do manage are 65 feet or greater, and those are required to have AIS systems, automated information systems, which allow our Coast Guard and our Office of Law Enforcement to track these vessels, their location and their speed. So it's relatively easy for me to say, but relatively easy for them to enforce because they have access to their transponders right at their desktop. So as far as how many have been find or things of that nature. I don't have that information, but that's certainly something we can try and get to you.
Well, Matthew here. I'll just speak to Canadian Waters. I can just say that since the mandatory speed reduction was implemented, the compliance has been very high in terms of the shipping industry. They understand the importance and are acting accordingly, despite the fact that it is very disruptive to some of their activities. So we appreciate their compliance on this and their understanding that the priority is to protect these whales.
At this time, there are no further questions in queue. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 and record your name. One moment as we wait to see if there are any further questions.
Operator, I'm not seeing any additional questions. If you would like to follow up with me, if you have any other questions, again, this is Kate Brogan with NOAA Fisheries Public Affairs. Feel free to do so after the call. My phone number is 301-427-8030, and my email address is Katherine, Katherine, Brogan, B as in boy, Rogan, at NOAA, NOAA.gov. And that information is on the media advisory as well. So please feel free to contact me with any follow-up questions, and I can work to answer them with my NOAA experts and in consultation with the folks from DFO. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, all of our experts, both from NOAA and Matthew Hardy from DFO. So thank you, everyone, for joining, and contact me if you need anything further.
This concludes today's conference. Participants may now disconnect, and speakers, please stand by.